Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 299 of the Daily Canon Weekly Podcast, brought to you by Manscaped.com. Yes, the Olympics, Euros, major championships and concerts are all in this summer because we're finally back opening society just in time. But you know what isn't that good right now? A wild and hairy bush. So tame your pubes with help from our friends at Manscaped. The leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Their third-generation performance package includes the flagship Lawnmower 3.0. And if an athlete treats their body like royalty, why not treat your pubes like Olympic gold? Fellas, do right by your balls and join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com. And, look, you want a little bit of a gift for yourself? Happy days. Here's 20% off and free shipping off your order. Just use the code DCPOD20. That's DCPOD20. Speaking of zero, zero is the number of players Arsenal didn't sign this week. Hey, joining me to join in the festivities of a positive week for Arsenal Football Club is Anita Sambal. Miss Sambal, how are you, ma'am?
Hello. Just struggled through a little backache over the last few weeks, but it's nice to see you cheerful about the Arsenal and the signings and everything.
I know Anita, of course, welcoming a new signing of her own in a few months and is taking a 30 to 45 minutes of her very well-needed rest time out to join me in these shenanigans. But yeah, it's a good week. Like, we saw Albert Longy Sakonga. Sambi Lekonga, Stephen. You said this 30 times in a YouTube video last week. Albert Sambi Lekonga. There you go. Who, you know, signed this week and played 45 minutes in a 4-1 victory over Millwall. That was featured maybe the worst camera work I've ever seen in my entire life. And if you're the cameraman, you're listening to this, I apologize. But it took me 15 minutes to work out who scored the first goal. I tweeted it at Smith Rowe, and like, it's like, oh no, that was Chambers. You're like, Chambers? Chambers wasn't even in the shot. And everybody,
it was so odd. Yeah, definitely. Just put the words out of my mind because, yeah, we saw Lokonga play, but did we actually?
We didn't see much else, you know. And I know London Colney wasn't exactly built for, you know, broadcasting purposes. It is a field, yeah. Field in London that's mown and not, you know, built on. But I suppose it's a good win. Does anybody care about preseason? No. I mean, come on,
now that we have won, no one cares. But the draws against the in back in Scotland and all of that, yeah, that was just a meltdown.
Yeah, which Rangers beat Real Madrid yesterday.
Yeah, I saw that.
We drew against Real Madrid or against Rangers, which means we are now better than Real Madrid. It's confirmed.
Obviously.
So yeah, so Varane should come to us instead of Manchester United.
Oh. $400,000 per week.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like, everyone's going to look at the signature fee, and we'll talk about Ben White in a moment. But when Arsenal announce Ben White in the next couple of days, and it might as well be done, it's gonna say Arsenal bought Ben White for 50 million, and Manchester United bought Raphael Varane for 47.
Yeah,
and everyone's going to look, well, why didn't Arsenal buy Raphael Varane? That's you could have paid 3 million less, and you're completely going to ignore the fact that Varane is going to be A, playing in Europe, and B, on 3 times as much money.
Mm.
You know, like, it's just the way where we are right now, where we can't compete for that uber sexy signing that everyone wants. You know, like, if Kylian Mbappe does decide to leave PSG this summer, are Arsenal getting him? No. You know, if Arsenal in the Champions League next year, let's just say we finish fourth, top of my head, and Erling Haaland decides, you know what, I'm going to activate my clause and I can leave for 70 million. Are Arsenal going to buy him? Maybe, but like, are they going to be able to give him the wages that United, City, Chelsea, Real Madrid, Barcelona can? No. So,
and like, I wouldn't want that. I mean, we had so many problems with a few of the players on really massive, massive wages, and have had a few seasons to get over that. Just now we are seeing some benefits of Mesut Özil leaving and us having his wages free.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, I really wouldn't want us to have a player on such massive wages as those big names ask for.
Like, recruitment is such a headache in any business, whether you're headhunting for someone to, you know, be a work in a call center, or, you know, be a junior middle manager in a photocopying service or wherever, you know, or for lawyers or for accountants or for football club. It's more than just looking up on a page. Oh, look, he's worth 45 million. Ringing up the club. Yeah, here's your 45 million. Oh, thanks. Yeah, done. Like, this takes months. And Arsenal are behind. They've been behind for a couple of years. And most of that was down to the fact that Mesut Ozil was on 350 grand a week. And we've gone through the pain of it and we've gone through the agonizing of it. But this is something that happens at every club. Like, everyone is looking, is bringing up Liverpool as a paragon of how to run a football club right now. You know, no big oil owner, no FFP issues. You know, they did it the right way and all that nonsense. But Jordan Henderson, Captain Fantastic, the leader of the club, is getting his agent to put it out that he's not happy with his contract and he wants out. Mm-hmm. Because he's on 100, 120 grand a week. Mo Salah's on 275. And he's like, I want that play. And of course he is, because it's just of natural. Course. But yeah. That's, you know, he's not getting that. He's 31 now. He's 2 years left in his contract. Liverpool are like, no, we're not paying you. So it's the little things. It's all the minutiae that goes into it, which is why, you know, when Jadon Sancho leaves Dortmund and everyone goes, well, he'll go to England. He's like, no, he's going to United. It's absolutely nailed on he's going to United. Why? Because City told him to get lost. So of course he's going to United, because he wants to show City that they fecked up. Yeah. And you've got to play into that. You've got to, you know, make sure that you're there to pick up on that. And for years, Arsenal weren't. They were always the last in for players like this. And now they're catching up. Now they're starting to buy a little bit smarter. You know, Tavares from Benfica, 8 million. Yes, we've seen 45 minutes of him. Looks a good player. Looks decent. Looks exactly what we need. You know, looks like a left back who can play a little bit of left wing, which is perfect considering our left back loves playing left wing. Mm-hmm. And now Lokonga looks like someone who's tidy, mobile, decent. You know, like, again, can't make any long-term judgments over 45 minutes, but he didn't look awful. You know, he looked like he fit in. And Ben White is going to be another one of those players that, to the extent of Saliba, when we bought Saliba, Saliba was bought to play in a certain system. And Ben White is going to be bought to play in a certain system. And I know, Anita, that you've said this on this podcast many times, that you don't like big price tags. You don't like these huge amount of money spent on one player. But if it is on Ben White, like, straight out, would you do it? Would you spend 50 million on an English defender?
Well, I mean, first time when that rumor showed up, it was like a month or so ago, when this transfer window started, and I wasn't really thrilled about it, because I thought, oh, it's just another, you know, big number price for English player with the emphasis on the English, because, you know, the passport and all of that. But I didn't know much about him back then. And one good positive thing, along with that, the fact that he's homegrown player, which we definitely lack, even with those few like Willock or Maitland-Niles staying, we are still struggling with the numbers there. And the fact that he's still pretty young, he's what, 23 years old?
Yeah.
So that's really good thing. I didn't know much about him. I didn't see him play that often. I won't lie here and say I'm an expert on him. But, you know, the more you look at it, the more you see people being more, I wouldn't say okay, even really happy with the transfer. It, you know, it helps me be a bit more convinced. But I mean, I'm still not thrilled about 50 million for any player, let alone a defender. But, you know, convince me of the opposite.
I'll try. I mean, would I pay 50 million for Ben White? My argument has always been, you pay market value for good players. And when Harry Maguire is going for 80 and Ben Chilwell is going for 50 and John Stones went for 40-odd, like, I can see...
It's the market that dictates the price.
It's the market that dictates the price. And right now, if you have got cash, it's a buyer's market. You know, so, you know, be like, Liverpool got Ibrahim Konate for 35 million. Manchester United are about to get Rafael Varane for just under 50 million. Like, but just like Saliba was bought to play in a certain system, Ben White is being played to play in Mikel Arteta's system. This is the 3-2-5 that Arsenal attack with. He is there to be the right side of centre back because he can play right back, he can play right centre back, and he can progress the ball really well, like really well. And he's shown this for a number of years. Like even before Brighton last year, when he was at Leeds, now it's the Championship, but he was 20. He was brilliant. Like everyone at Leeds was saying, we have to buy him. Even if it's 30, 35 million, we have to buy him. That's 2 years ago. So like he has pedigree and he has form. And in the Euros, everyone, they asked, who's your biggest surprise here? It wasn't Saka, it was Ben White. You know, there is definitely a talent there. And if Manchester City were paying 50 million for Ben White, no one would bat an eyelid.
Yeah, true.
That's the thing. Like the thing here, I think, is that it's Arsenal spending 50 million on Ben White. And Arsenal's biggest problem last year wasn't defending, it was attacking. So when you see Arsenal spending big money on a centre back, you're like, oh, really? But they've just spent 28 million on Saliba and 20 odd million on Gabriel and 10 million on Pablo Mari. Now they're spending 50 million on another one. You know, like
while struggling in the midfield and attack.
When they clearly need a centre midfielder of any note, it does seem like an odd use of facilities. But I do think he's really good. I absolutely think he's really good. But the biggest problem I have with it is the same problem you now are finding with William Saliba, because Saliba was bought to play as a left-sided centre-back. He's right-footed, but he's a left-sided centre-back. And then they sell Unai Emery, or they sack him. I wish they could sell him. They would have got something. I don't know what they would have got back from. Not a lot. But he's sacked, and then Arteta's brought in. And then they bring in Gabriel, a left-sided centre-back, who's left-footed and can play on the ball. They bring in Pablo Mari, who's left-footed, plays left-sided. And all of a sudden, there's no room for Saliba to play because he plays on the left side of a centre-back pairing. And here comes Ben White brought in to play as a right-footed right centre-back, even though you've got, you know, Chambers and etc. Chambers, Holding, etc. Like, you've got players in, but Ben White is better than Rob Holding. He's better than Callum Chambers in both positions, at both right-back and centre-back. But what if Arsenal don't play well in the first 12, 14 games and they're 10th and Arteta gets the sack?
The same recall.
Now, all of a sudden, you're looking at it and you go, well, is Ben White going to fit in for the next lad? Like, and I know those are hypotheticals and what ifs, but this is where not having a joined up plan of succession for years after Wenger really, really hurts Arsenal, because there is no long term plan set in stone to say, right, we're playing like this, we're going to this system, we're going into this setup, and we need these players. And whatever head coach gets brought in, he's going to be playing this system because this is the way Arsenal want to play. That's where, if you sack Arteta, you can't sack Edu. And that's the problem. And now it becomes a case of how much do you trust Edu and how much do you trust Arteta? And if your answer to that is not a lot, I can't fault you.
It seems that the club and the board and whoever is running everything behind trust him. And it seems that younger players
love him.
Bought in the whole narrative and everything.
Yeah. I think narrative is a... Narrative is a strong word. I mean, Emile Smith Rowe made it perfectly clear this week.
I'm not a native speaker. I'm sorry.
I agree. Which is why I'm trying to. Like I said, my point being is that like the message coming out of Arsenal has always been that the young lads love Arteta, and then we saw up until Christmas that he played none of them, and we're like, does he really? Does he? You know, like surely he would play them more. And then, you know, after literally one day after Christmas, it's almost like, you know, Santa came down and he went, right, here's two presents for you. Here's Saka and Smith. Oh, lovely. Yay, new toys. Throws them in, beats Chelsea, and away we go. But you don't give Emile Smith Rowe number 10 and then drop him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't and can't. You know, and it doesn't really, I don't mind if he plays left mid, center mid, cam, right wing. I don't care. But you are telling him absolutely adamantly, he's part of my plan. You know, you can't bandy around numbers like 7 and 10 and say, look, here, we're all right. You know, you're saying them, like, look what Manchester United have done with number 7 over the years. Mm. Once Ronaldo left, they gave it to Michael Owen, lol. You know, Antonio Valencia had it for years, playing it right back. now Cavani has it. And it's like Jadon Sancho comes up and says, can I have 7, please? And they're like, no. And he's like, but... I mean, right, I'm exactly the lad you want wearing 7. So he's wearing 25. Yeah.
I thought I saw some kind of leaked images.
He's wearing 25 because Cavani has 7 and he's like, I've given up 7. Like, it's, yeah. And yeah, so crying. to give a lad 10, again, maybe you could genuinely say that the biggest mistake Arsene Wenger ever made at Arsenal Football Club was giving William Gallas 10.
Don't
you mind. You know, and I mean, I sincere because that completely fed his ego to the point where he thought he was bigger than the club.
Yeah.
Completely. You know, the way he's like, oh, really? They're giving me Dennis Bergkamp's 10. And you're like, no, you save that. You absolutely save that. And you save it for moments like this, when you have someone like Mesut Ozil, who, yes, his exit was acrimonious and it wasn't great, but for a good 2.5-3 years, he was imperious as a number 10. Mm-hmm. He was exactly what you wanted a number 10 to be.
Yeah.
And Smith Rowe, growing up as an Arsenal lad, coming through the academy as an Arsenal lad, looking at the lad wearing number 10, going, yeah, I want to be like that. And the club going, okay, here's his shirt.
Hope it turns out better than Jack Wilshere.
Wilshere was unlucky. Let's be fair. Yeah. Like Wilshere was trying his absolute best to a fault. You know, like, he was trying too hard, and then he got an England call up and he's like, great, okay. And he played through an ankle injury he told nobody about because he was too excited to play.
Mm.
And then the ankle goes through the foot and it went downhill from there. And like, it's an absolute crying shame. And I, like I said, he would have got 10 a lot earlier than he should have, you know. But again, you don't give a lad 10 unless you're going to build a team around him. You just don't. Like, that is, it's just one of those numbers. And to give Saka 7, like, even last year, when he's 6 months in, he said, look, you're signing a new contract. And he's like, oh, yeah, what number are I getting? 7. And he's like, oh. Oh, okay.
Says a lot, yeah.
You know, like, oh, shit. Right, okay. And it's the same with 10. And, you know, if Lacazette leaves, you know, the couple of reports saying that Atletico Madrid are bidding 13 million for him. If he leaves, like, who gets 9? Hmm. You know, when Ceballos is gone, no one's wearing 8 right now. Like, Arsenal right now have a period where, you know, their number 10 wasn't playing, the number 9 wasn't playing, the number 8 wasn't playing, the number 7 wasn't playing. Hmm. You know, like, you can't, and it's, for those who say, oh, it's only a number, I get it, but, like, you build your team around key players, and your key players wear 1 to 11. And Arsenal, for a couple of years, didn't have a number 10. You know, for a full year and a bit, had no number 10. Like, so, squad building has been a problem for this club for a number of years, and hopefully this is the start of that being resetted, that Arsenal are buying young. Maybe it's to sell on, maybe it's to make sure that it guarantees a sell-on fee, okay. But at least you're protecting your investment. But if you're buying young and you're buying good, then at least you get their peak, you get their prime. So I'd rather buy Ben White for 50 million at 23 than I would at 26, 27.
And Varane at 28.
Varane at 28, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, and who's reliant on his pace quite a lot. You know, like he's the perfect partner for Harry Maguire in the same way he was a perfect partner for Sergio Ramos, because Sergio Ramos just barked at him and went, you there.
Hmm.
And Harry Maguire is going to do exactly the same thing.
Well, just realized that Real Madrid are losing both of their.
Yeah. You know, your penny star for David Alaba, who went there to play centre mid. And now has been told, yeah, about that, mate. You know, but again, like, that's how, you know, plans fall apart in in, you know, he signs for Real Madrid in January. And he goes, right, okay, I'm going to finally get my dream of playing centre mid for a big club. I've been shunted around the place by Bayern Munich, left mid, CDM, left back, centre back. I want to, I know I can play centre mid for a big club. I do it for Austria. And Real Madrid told me I can play, I'll be, basically, I'll be the next Luka Modric. No offence, Anita. but I'll play that role. I'll be slightly more attacking, slightly more box to box, and I'm going to be adventurous and I'm going to be dynamic and I'm finally going to play. And then he gets there and he says, who's our centre back? And everyone's looking at him. Yeah. You know, like it's amazing how, yeah. But that's another example of how squad building completely falls apart when managers are lost
in months. Yeah. In months.
Never mind years, in months.
Mm. So in big clubs, like.
Yeah.
Bigger, you know, clubs than Arsenal.
Yeah, yeah. It can happen to anyone. It can happen to absolutely anyone. So if this is the start, if this turns out to be the start of a 3 or 4 year long-term plan that is implemented by Arteta, and I do, then it'll be a good one because it'll have worked.
It ends with the Champions League title.
Well, I would settle for at least hearing the music first. You know, like that's the, I'll settle for just, you know, being able to turn on a TV and go, oh no, wait, Arsenal playing tomorrow night. Yo,
would you expect the Champions League qualifications after this season right away?
A good question.
I mean, that's obviously dream goal for this season, but is it realistic when you see us last season, how much we have to improve on that, and you see all other clubs improving as well, especially but those that are for top four.
The bigger problem is it's not us, it's everyone else. So Arsenal, since Boxing Day, since Demon's Day, whatever you want to call it, if you took the league from then, we're third.
Mm.
Right? So Arsenal have improved. Now, they won 1 in 10 games in November and, you know, October. Like, that was abysmal and it nearly got Arteta sacked. But they're playing better. Are they playing brilliantly? No, but they're playing better. Arsenal's problem next year, this season coming, is going to be the fact that Manchester United have just added Jadon Sancho. They're probably going to, very probably going to add Raphael Varane, and there's a decent chance they're going to add Camavinga too. Right? So a team that Arsenal went to Old Trafford and beat last year is now very much better. Tottenham are probably going to lose Harry Kane, but they're going to end up probably spending all that money on better players. Now, does that mean they're going to be better than they were last year? God only knows. They're going to be playing worse football. I know that because Nuno Espirito Santo plays worse football than Jose Mourinho. That might sound hard to believe, but go watch it. You know, we've all know that Wolves have been decent. What we know of Wolves is that they give the ball to Adama Traore and he runs with it. And that's it.
It's Portugal national team. Don't like them at all. So yes. I fully expect that from Tottenham.
But like I said, so that's one team that you would expect Arsenal to finish ahead of.
Mm.
You know, especially if they lose Kane. It's been too long. But if United are going to be better than last season, which I think they will be, Liverpool played 9 games with Van Dijk last year. So if he comes back fit, they're better than they were last year. City won the league and Chelsea won the Champions League. So, you know, like, it's, and when you,
yeah,
when
it's
you,
not just us. It's not,
it's not
us,
just
yeah.
us. And when yeah. you look at when you look at the fact that what's out there that's going to beat English teams in Europe next season, because Real Madrid and Barcelona are going to be worse than they were this season. Juventus are going to be worse. Bayern Munich are going to be the same, and PSG might be a little bit better, but that's it. Yeah. No one else. So the biggest thing Arsenal have in their armory, no pun intended for once, is that they're only going to be playing 45 games next season, in a season that's going to be hugely compressed because of the need to start next season on top of this season, next season again earlier, because they're taking 6 weeks off for the World Cup in November. So Arsenal we saw how it benefited. Like, there was a video going around of Arsenal playing Wonderball against Chelsea in 2012 when Antonio Conte was there, and we hopped off them, and he said, oh my God, this is Wenger ball. And me, with a couple of liquid beverages in me, said that, yes, this is great football, but one team won that league that year and it's not the team in red. Because the team in blue suddenly went, oh, we've got Antonio Conte as the manager, let's go to 3-5-2 because that's what he knows. And they won 13 games in a row and won the league by 10 points. Like, they didn't have European football that year. Liverpool, when they should have won the league, when they had Suarez and Sterling and Sturridge and Gerrard in his last big year, they should have won the league that year. They didn't have European football that year. So there is a tangible benefit to only having to play once a week in a season where rest and recuperation is going to be even more important than it was last season. And we saw how injuries and just, you know, COVID in general just wreaked havoc with a whole load of teams. And it's even still wreaking havoc now. You know, Arsenal couldn't play in Orlando this week because one or two people in the staff got COVID. Chelsea couldn't play in Drogheda this week in Ireland because someone got COVID and they had to fly back. Yeah. So it's, you know, this isn't, you know, just because the season's going to start, we're going to have some people in the stands. It doesn't mean that everything's fine and hunky-dory. You know, it's going to be tricky. But look, I'm just, now we're kind of past post-quarantine-ish. I'm getting my second jab tomorrow. Get the jab. I just get the jab. If you're complaining about the 5G signal in your arm not being the best, then fine, get the jab. Or the Cyberlux virus being part of the jab, and its protein signature has got 666 in the side of it. Like, first of all, the number of the beast is 616. So, but just get fake the jab. Fake news. But I'm just looking forward to, you know, like I said, the Irish pubs open back up today. So you're lucky I'm here. Never mind Matthew Wade, who's not here this week because he's protesting the fact that he's outside the PGMOL buildings because they're going to make the lines thicker just to make offsides look a little bit easier. And you don't want to know what he was waving at them, that's insinuating that needs to be made thicker as well. I'm just telling you that now. But like I said, as soon as this pod is finished, I'm off to the pub. Because Ireland is finally getting back to, you know, the world is starting to open again. And do you know what can help you get ready for that, Anita? The performance package 3.0 from manscaped.com.
Tell me more.
Because inside, you'll find their lawnmower 3.0 trimmer, their weed whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, the crop preserver ball deodorant, the crop reviver toner, plus two free gifts, performance boxer briefs, and the shed travel bag. And the bag is nice. I'm just saying this now. The bag is nice. Now, so you want to talk about world-class dismounted to a post-quarantine world? By the way, Simone Biles last night. Jesus Christ. An unbelievable athlete, like ridiculous. There's great photography going around of just her, and the shutter speeds of even modern cameras can't keep up with her. So she almost looks like a star, like an 8-pointed star, because she's twirling so quick in the air. Like it's ridiculous. But like I said, she's ridiculous. Manscaped is ridiculous. This package they're giving to you, it's the perfect package for your package. And the Lawnmower 3.0 is here to take the podium. This third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. This package also comes with the weed whacker to chop your worst weeds up top in both your nose and ear. This tool is a lock to take home gold in the biathlon. And after trimming your pubes, show them some sportsmanship with Manscaped's liquid formulas, the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and Crop Reviver Ball Toner. They are the key to feeling victorious this year. And of course, they've thrown in two free gifts as a special package to you, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. If you want to avail of this magnificent offer, you get 20% off free shipping with the code DCPOD20. That's DCP20 at manscaped.com. Achieve public glory and in the same way, achieve pubic glory this year with manscaped.com. And purchases like that improve everyone's life. A bit of a theme of this week's pod, because Tammy Abraham's name has cropped up again. And I'd like to know your thoughts of this theory, one of my insane hypotheticals, because people want everything, right?
Yeah.
We want perfection. When we order something, we want it to do everything. And Tammy Abraham is being accused of the egregious crime of doing nothing but score goals.
Imagine. Striker.
And my question is, are we being too picky here? Like, if Arsenal do spend 40 million on Tammy Abraham and if they sell Lacazette for 13 million and bring in Abraham for 40, and they continue with this formation that they're trying out right now, which has two strikers in it, even though it's 3-2-5 attacking with three up top, a left winger, a striker, and a right winger, it's usually almost the left winger is another striker. and they kind of switch positions, and then you have the right winger staying out on the right. Like, are we moving into a phase where the club needs four strikers? Where instead of thinking about, right, well, we're only playing one of them, we really only need two and maybe a young lad to fill in if both get injured. Are we looking at a situation where maybe we actually do need three or four because we're going to always be playing them in two at one time? And if Lacazette goes, then we've got Aubameyang, Martinelli, Balogun and Nketiah, and Nketiah is probably going to go too. Maybe we do need the fourth body after all.
Well, one thing that concerns me the most here is those two ifs that you mentioned, if Lacazette goes and if Nketiah goes. Because it's my mother's genes in me. I'm just worried about the money.
Yeah. No, it's a fair comment.
I mean, where are we getting that money? Because we are spending, we already spent on Sami Lokonga and on Nuno Tavares, and now 50 million on Ben White, and then 40 more million on Tammy Abraham, with no one leaving so far.
Well, the idea would be that, at least initial reports are saying that it would be a loan with an obligation to buy next year.
So you're spending
next month's wages on this month's holiday, basically, which I'm not a big fan of, but that's just the way business is done these days in football. It's why Barcelona are 600 million in debt, because they haven't spent last year's money. They've already spent this year's money, you know, and that's gone. And now they're looking around and they're finally able to get Aguero and Depay at least signed, because Messi is agreeing this new 5-year contract that pays him almost nothing in year one and then double what he was on in year two, year three, year four, and year five. Because Barcelona, in their great thinking, because this thinking has never backfired before, that everything's going to be hunky-dory in 2023.
Of course.
And they're going to be rich, and they're going to be, you know, paying, be able to pay hundreds of millions of euros for players again, and everything will be grand. As if they have...
Only fools and horses thinking.
Yeah. And... you'd think they'd be learning their lesson, but they're like, no, everything will go back to the way it was, because that's the way we want it. It's like, I guess I'm sure. It's why we bought Raul Salehi. That's why we brought him in, because Barcelona were doing it. We were like, well, how'd you do that? And he says, oh, I'll show you. Here's Nicola Pepe for 15 million more than he should have paid. Ah, thanks for that. Thanks for that. We're paying 15 million a year for him for 5 years.
Well, I mean, I have nothing against Tammy Abraham. I agree with your comment that we might be a bit too picky, because you're buying a striker that is great at scoring goals. What's the problem there? It's just simple like that. Do we need four of them? I mean, yeah, if Nketiah and Lacazette are both to leave, I think that would be a good investment. But if we are still not certain about them and not sure about them, I think I would be more calm about it and more happy about the transfer if those two are, you know, either gone or on a really firm way out.
And with Aubameyang at 32.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just trying to nip a problem in the bud before it becomes a bigger one. They're trying to say, look, we probably got 1 or 2 years more of Aubameyang at his, maybe not even at his prime, but at his elite best, you know, where we can get 20 goals, 20 Premier League goals a season out of him. We've got a bit of a gap, you know, like we've no like 27, 28 year old striker at the club. You know, Lacazette's now 30. He's got 1 year left in his contract, and I don't think anyone's going to, Lacazette's going to want something close to his contract again, and he's on £180,000 a week. Yes, exactly. Arsenal shouldn't pay that. So, but someone will, you know, for free. Like, if you get Lacazette for free and he's 180 grand a week, you'll no bother.
That seems like Ramsey one.
Yeah, exactly the same. And so if Arsenal are trying to arrest that by bringing in Tammy Abraham now, then next year you'll have one more year of Aubameyang, but you'll also have, you know, Florent Balogun with a year of experience under his belt, Gabriel Martinelli with 2 years of experience under his belt, and Tammy Abraham already there with a year at the club. You can start to see where their thought lines of logic are going, where they're trying to build for the future. Again, it's very much along the lines of Ben White, where it's like, we're not really buying for this year. We're buying for next year and the year after. He's good now, but we think we're really going to feel the benefits in 2 years when Aubameyang's gone and, you know, Ben White's 26, 27 and Martinelli starts coming into his prime. We feel like we bring in Abraham now for 40, we're saving ourselves more money in the future.
All this smart thinking making me suspicious.
Yeah, it doesn't suit us, does it? I think that's like, we're not, and that's the problem too with football. It doesn't really suit logic because we all like the speculation and the gossip and the drama, yeah. You know, and like Tammy Abraham's a damn good striker. He's an excellent striker, but he is not what you would call flashy.
No.
He is not your spectacular big name signing. He's not, for want of a better word, a sexy name. You know, he's a good, he's a damn good player, but
he's homegrown as well, right?
Yeah. Oh, he's English. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like it's one of those situations where it would be good business, but is it something that's going to get, you know, your average fan's heartbeat racing? Probably not. You know, like not it. And the gas thing is that unless it's Kane. Unless it's like one of these big name strikers, I don't think there's anyone there that would get the fans' heartbeats racing. Like I don't know if there's a player out there, maybe apart from Aouar, only because we were linked with spending 60 million on him last year. If we're now in the race to get him for 20 million this year, suddenly fans go, oh my God, we're getting a player that we should have paid a fortune for last year for cheap. Yay. You know, now you're
that's exciting. Yeah.
Your interest is peaked. You know, and that's exciting. But the level of player that you're going to be spending 70, 80 million on a striker for, A, wouldn't be a good thing to spend money on when we've still got Aubameyang there, who's still really good at number nine, and is you're still your captain, and it's still going to be...
really fantastic chance against Millwall. Yeah. Shame that he didn't go in for the first goal.
Like, you don't need a mega striker now, but you might need a mega striker in 2 years, and if you think Tammy Abraham's got the potential to be a mega striker in 2 years, then you buy him now.
Yeah, that's good thinking, yeah.
You know, so it's another judgment call by a management team that not many of us have a lot of trust in. that's the problem. And, you know, never mind selling players and buying players. Like, you can already see on Twitter, and I know Twitter's a cesspool at the best of times and Facebook's worse, but you definitely get the sense that fans are starting to get antsy a little bit. And
yeah, because no one's leaving.
Because no one's leaving. And what you got to realize is that if there were five or six players, say at Tottenham or City or even Chelsea, and you knew you could get them for cheaper in a month, you'd be absolutely livid if Arsenal walked in there now with their asking price and paid it. So I think it's going to be a very, 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 very busy last couple of weeks. I think everyone is just waiting for the sale. Everyone's waiting for the January sales. And then a week before the market closes, outside the doors of the shop, it's going to be packed and everyone's going to be realizing, oh, we're all going for the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then prices will go back up because people outbid each other. That's what you got to hope for if you're Arsenal, whether it's with Maitland-Niles, whether it's with Nketiah, whether it's with Joe Willock, that, especially with Willock. Like, if what you really want if you're an Arsenal fan, if you think that Willock is someone that you should cash in on, what you want is either Norwich or, you know, West Brom or someone that's come up and to say, right, we'll buy Willock for 18, 20 million. Basically what happened with Rooney. But not, obviously they're not the same caliber of player, but Manchester United were fully prepared to wait years for Rooney because they wanted him to play every game at Everton. They were like, he's getting experience, he'll be fine. As soon as Everton say he's up for sale, we'll pounce. And then Bobby Robson, the great Sir Bobby Robson at Newcastle United, went, he's really good, I'll bid 20 million for him. And United went, damn. God damn it. We don't want to pay it yet. We're broke. And they said, look, here's 30. And
it's just how business goes, yeah.
It's just how business goes. So you want someone to come in, even if it's a Brighton or, you know, a West Ham. Say West Ham can't get Jesse Lingard. And they look at Joe Willock and go, look, we think we could do the same reclamation job. We'll offer 20 million for him. Now you want Newcastle to come in and go, here's 25.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what you want. You want bidding wars to start, but bidding wars aren't going to start until teams feel like they're obligated to get into one. And they don't right now because they can see prices falling in front of them. They can see
that the similar will happen with Bellerin and Xhaka, who are destined for Serie A, it seems.
Yeah, I think Roma are very much waiting this out. Mm. And Inter Milan, and unfortunately, it's the smart thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, if Arsenal are planning ahead with playing Callum Chambers at right back and now have Ben White, who can also play right back, like, they've no need for Hector Bellerin, and Inter Milan know this. And Inter Milan are broke. Yes, they just sold Hakimi for 60 million, but that's gone straight to the debt. You know, like, they don't want to pay. Like, Arsenal would love 20 million for Hector Bellerin. I don't think they'll get it, because Inter Milan will do what Manchester City tried to do with Alexis Sanchez. Literally wait until the last day of the season and say, last day of the market opening, and say, look, here's 60 million.
Take it or leave it.
You know, so a lot of gamesmanship, a lot of brinksmanship, and a lot of frantic phone calls. So, yeah.
This is complicated to talk with finance and all. Let's talk about the Ajax kit that we are wearing now.
I mean, from the front, it looks grand. But it looks grand from the front because of the little bit of blue trim, which I'm not a big fan of. But like they're clearly trying, like, Adidas are literally looking through what Nike did in the late 90s and the mid to late 90s and going, right, okay, we'll take three nice kits out of that and it'll be grand. So very pale yellow kit. Home kit with the Dreamcast one from 98-99 with the blue piping down the sides, and then the original Nike away kit with the lightning stripes down the middle of it. And
the third
kit looks amazing. Okay. Now, a lot of people have said it looks like the fabric that's used on underground train seats.
Yeah.
And I can't blame them. The away ones, it's a yellow shirt, it's Arsenal, it's grand. I'm currently wearing the pink, black and grey camouflage kit. It's a peach. I'm not going to do a Lee Gunner here and say, "Oh, it's shocking! Oh, Jesus, people! I can't believe they're robbing their fans." I mean, look, it's 60 quid for a shirt of Ped Moore. It's a nice shirt. Get it? Like, it's as simple as that. But from the back, that Arsenal kit is an Ajax kit.
Maybe it's just us, because I watched I think it was a clip or something with my husband, and I commented like, "Oh, look at us! We have an Ajax kit for this season," and he's like, "What? Ajax? It doesn't look like Ajax kit at all."
From the back,
that big white piece, but
yeah, it's if there's like a Venn diagram or a slider between Arsenal and Ajax, it's definitely more along towards Ajax than it is to Arsenal.
Mm, yeah.
And not having Premier League numbers and names on the back of it make it worse. I think once you see English font on it, you think, oh yeah, no, it's an English, because Manchester United's home shirt is a Middlesbrough kit. Now, their away kit and their third kit are lovely. I don't know what club Liverpool's home kit is, but it's not a Liverpool kit with those lightning stripes down, you know, with those zigzags down the middle of it.
Mm.
You know, like there's a lot of questionable kits being released this year. A lot. This
first one is amazing.
I think quite frankly, and maybe we're admitting our biases, we might be the only two people in the world who like that kit.
I don't like it.
You it's don't a like
sarcasm.
It.
No.
I right. Okay. Then I would stand
it's just
up.
You. It's just you.
It's just me. I think that kit is outstanding. The only thing it ruins it is the black part on the back of it, where they got put in for their name. I love the design.
I was just like, it looks like a training shirt for me.
Yeah.
I would get it at something like that on training shirt, like, as you said, you are wearing camouflage.
Yeah. I'm wearing pink camouflage. Like, that says it all, frankly.
I mean, yeah, not a fan.
But they're like, go look at Inter Milan's home kit is amazing, and then they put the sponsor on it, and it's the same sponsor that's brought out Arsenal's fan credit by socios.com. like, it's awful, like, it's hideous. And you know, Bayern Munich's kit is not great. Barcelona's kit is a clown fiesta.
I mean, why?
Because they ran out of stripes.
Why ruin the classic? It's like what they are trying to do with the Croatia kit over and over again.
Yeah,
try to make something different with the Czechers, but when the classic is just amazing.
Yeah. Well, you see, what you do is you make something completely out of... Arsenal have done this for years. They've done it with the black and purple one that came out? Most people said, oh my God, it's horrible. Now it's a classic. Like the blue one that's going to come out this year. Like, that's going to become an instant classic. Like, what they do is they release something mad, like the Barcelona one this year, and they go, oh, it's new, it's futuristic, it's a unique interpretation of the design, even though it's literally a crest. You know, it's the Barcelona crest. And then next year, they just released just basic blue and red stripes. And they go, ah, we're going back to the retro. and it sells like hotcakes.
Yeah.
You know, it's that easy. It's that easy. Oh, yeah. We are fed a line and we lap it up.
But I didn't order the new kits just yet. I'm waiting for the third one to be released. And then
we'll
go for that one, definitely. And maybe think about the away one, because yellow is definitely looking good. Although I'm not massive fan of the pale color. I'm much more into the bright yellow.
It's better in public. It's better in person. It's not as pale.
Heard that, yeah.
Yeah, but those are the official Daily Canon kit reviews of 2021. basically, try on the home one, because if you like the white panels down your sides, you're grand. If you're like me, a huskier gentleman, it might not be the best look. the second kit, the away kit is grand. Wait for the third kit. And if you can see the pink training kit, get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, absolutely get it. It's great with jeans. So if you're like a middle-aged old man like me, who likes wearing very dark blue jeans and white Adidas runners, and you want to look like you're having a midlife crisis, this is perfect. It's absolutely perfect. and on that bombshell, listener, we'll leave it. Remember, before we go, manscaped.com, you get 20% off with free shipping with the code DCPOD20. That's DCPOD20 at manscaped.com. You get 20% off, free shipping. Get it. It's a great razor, great bag, great everything. Go nuts. Anita Sambal, thank you for joining us always. Greatly appreciated, ma'am.
It was fun.
And we will talk to you next week. This episode 300.
Yay.
That's going to be a crowded pod. I can guarantee you that right now. We will talk to you next week, listener. Good luck.
Bye.